Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Peaceful Homebirth. Today, I'm sharing an interview I had with Gina Mundy. It was so helpful and really different than what I've had on the show before. This episode will be relevant to those who are choosing home birth, a birth center, or a hospital birth. And I really encourage you to listen to the whole episode as we talk about what to do in case of a home birth transfer at the end. So, let me introduce my guest. Gina Mundy is an attorney that specializes in childbirth cases. For over 2 decades, she has analyzed the mistakes that are made during labor and delivery. Drawing on this knowledge, she has authored the best-selling book, A Parent's Guide to a Safer Childbirth, to help parents prevent these mistakes and have a healthy baby. Rather than merely getting involved after an unfortunate mistake was made, Gina has taken a proactive approach by getting involved before childbirth. Throughout her career, Gina has traveled nationwide, engaging with healthcare professionals such as doctors, nurses, and midwives to explore all aspects of labor and delivery. These interactions have provided her with an invaluable insight, enabling her to appreciate the diverse perspectives prevalent in different regions of the country. Meeting with experts from various states, she's explored and analyzed a myriad of issues that can arise during labor delivery, impacting both mother and baby. Gina has conducted extensive research, meticulously analyzing and dissecting countless studies pertaining to childbirth. This rigorous process was essential in equipping her with the necessary knowledge to undertake lengthy cross-examinations of a diverse array of experts. Through these examinations, she skillfully discerns their opinions on the errors that have occurred during labor and delivery. This has sharpened her knowledge, allowing her to become a highly proficient in the nuances of childbirth. In her capacity as a legal counsel, Gina has closely worked with delivery teams whose care has been questioned following adverse outcomes. She has spent thousands of hours meticulously scrutinizing cases, conducting interviews with delivery teams, and thoroughly examining medical records to gain an in-depth understanding of every decision made during labor and delivery. She really is a wealth of knowledge and has seen it all. But before we get into this interview, I do want to remind you that I have a few spots left this week for a free 30-minute birth strategy call where I will act like your personal home birth coach. You can ask me anything. And maybe you're just not sure yet if home birth is for you and you have some questions. Or you've had a traumatic birth and you're not sure what to do to prepare for something different. Or maybe you're a first-time mom and you're excited for home birth, but want to make sure that you have all the support you need to have that peaceful transition into motherhood. If any of these are you, then this call is for you. So schedule today at bit.ly/birth strategy. All right, let's get into the show. Welcome to the Peaceful Home Birth Podcast, where your journey to a joyful and empowered birth experience begins. I'm your host, Allie McLean, a registered nurse, home birth coach, devoted wife, and proud mother to 4 incredible kiddos. I've walked the path from trauma to triumph, and I'm here to guide you every step of the way. At the Peaceful Home Birth Podcast, we're more than just a show. We're a community of dreamers, believers, and fearless mothers-to-be. If you're seeking to reclaim your birth story, to transform fear into confidence, and to embrace the beauty of home birth, you've found your tribe. My own transformative journey began with a traumatic C-section, propelling me on a quest to uncover the power of home birth. And now I'm on a mission to help you rise above your past, prevent needless C-sections, and stand firmly in the certainty of your dream birth. As a devoted follower of Jesus, I believe that his divine design for birth is inherently good. It is a reflection of his love, strength, and grace. If the dream of home birth has been planted on your heart, know that it's there for a purpose, and I'm here to stand with you as you pursue it wholeheartedly. In a world filled with racing thoughts and doubts, I'm your guide to taking those thoughts captive, making them obedient to Christ, and replacing them with the liberating truth. Together, we'll navigate the challenges that lie ahead, finding not only freedom, but also unbridled joy on your path to motherhood. This podcast is a haven for the woman who has faced the darkness of a traumatic birth and has questioned whether home birth is within her reach. Here we shatter those doubts. Join us for illuminating interviews with remarkable birth workers who share our reverence for the sanctity and splendor of birth. Listen to inspiring women as they recount their triumphant birth stories, each a testament to the strength that resides within you. So whether you're just starting to explore the world of home birth or you're already on this radiant journey, the Peaceful Home Birth Podcast is your sanctuary, your wellspring of knowledge, and your unwavering support system. Get ready to be inspired, to be empowered, and to embark on a path that leads you to the birth you've always dreamed of. It's time to experience the Holy Spirit's power, to embrace the beauty of birth, and to create a legacy of love and strength. Are you ready to transform your birth experience? Let's dive in. Well, hi, Gina. Thank you for coming on the show today. I'm so excited that you're here. And this is going to be a really interesting conversation. We were just kind of chatting before that. A lot of women who find this podcast have experienced a traumatic birth in the hospital before, and they're just looking for different options. And you've been on that side. You've seen the traumatic cases and you've been involved. So I would love for you just to introduce yourself quickly. Who are we getting to know a little bit today? And go ahead and do that.
Thanks, Allie, for having me. I'm excited for today's conversation. I think it's a very important one that will hopefully, you know, be interesting for your audience. So I am a mom of three. I have a 19-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 9-year-old. And I live in Michigan. I have been married 21 years. And I've also been an attorney specializing in childbirth cases for 21 years. Basically, straight out of law school, I got my first job and I just stumbled into this area. Nobody teaches you how to be a baby lawyer. I didn't even know this profession existed, but I had just gotten married. So having a baby was on my radar. So I wanted to, you know, keep up, you know, stay. I got my first job and then I'm like, okay, wait a minute. You know, actually, you know, I should back up just so your audience understands what a childbirth case is. It involves the birth of a baby when something goes wrong, whether it's a mistake or it's a complication, and baby's not born healthy. And sometimes babies pass away and sometimes moms pass away during childbirth. So when I was hired into a team of over 20 of us. And it was really scary to know that there's this huge team. This is all we did for these baby cases. So I stuck with it because I wanted to make sure, you know, during the birth of my kids that, you know, everything that I was seeing basically, you know, didn't happen to my kids.
Yeah. Well, I can only imagine being a part of cases like those were really scary as you started entering motherhood. How was that transition? How did you compartmentalize what you were doing at work? And then how did your births turn out knowing what you know?
So in 2004 is when I had my first baby, my daughter. And basically back then, a lot of the baby lawyers wanted elective C-sections because we just could not relax enough to have a baby naturally. But in 2004, it was still controversial. So my baby lawyer friends, they would just tell their doctors they had herpes because in 2004, if you had herpes, you got your elective C-section. Well, me, I'm like, I'm not putting that in my medical record that I have herpes. I don't have herpes. So, you know, I talked to my doctor and he's like, Gina, let's just see how you do. And, you know, I just couldn't relax. So they ended up sectioning me. But my mental psyche, yes, going through these cases and being pregnant. And then, you know, these poor moms, you know, I would have to go and talk to them, you know, during my pregnancy. And I'm sitting here pregnant and they're telling me how they just lost their baby or their baby is, you know, was born very sick. So yeah, it's always been a big struggle, for sure, having kids and doing what I do. Cause you know, you can't unsee what you've seen, can't unknow what you know. But what happened is actually I clearly emotionally suppressed everything that I had seen for the first 19 years. Because when I went to write my book, so I'm sure you're in the introduction, you know, when you talk at the beginning, but I authored a book on how to have a safer childbirth based upon the mistakes and complications that I've seen. But I did that after 19 years in the field. In the first 3 months of writing that book, I cried every single morning. Like I physically could not stop crying. It was actually kind of concerning, but as the months went on and after 3 months, it was like I had this clarity, you know, that I knew things that could help prevent these mistakes and complications from occurring to other families. So yes, it all came out at the end. I had this clarity, but no, I think I emotionally suppressed it for about the first 19 years is the only way I can really explain it. And that became apparent when I started writing the book.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure it was a very therapeutic process to go through to, I mean, unload everything that you've seen, everything you've been involved with. I mean, childbirth, I talk about it on this podcast all the time. It affects us from the moment that we get pregnant through our entire lives. I've talked to 80-year-old women who remember their birth so vividly. And so I can only imagine that all of the stories that you were hearing, it was tough to hold on to. And so I'm thankful for your book because I know that home birth isn't for everybody, but also for women who have had a traumatic birth and are choosing home birth, it also really validates. Like I like that you called it safer childbirth because birth is as safe as life is, and life itself just comes with risk. I was just talking to a mom the other day. She's like, well, what if, you know, I'm far away from the hospital and something happens? And I'm like, you get to define that risk. That's the part of it. Like, life is not risk-free. And so we have to choose what risk that we're willing to take. And for everybody, that's going to be different. But one of the questions I've gotten quite a bit actually is like, well, I had this traumatic birth. Do I get a lawyer involved? What type of cases have you seen? What constitutes as like bad enough? I don't know if that's the right, but bad enough to hire a lawyer and get somebody involved. Could you speak to that?
Oh, absolutely. So basically the cases that I'm involved in, there is some type of injury. So permanent injury or whatnot. Usually it's, you know, injury to baby, sometimes injury to mom. You know, we even talk about nicking the bladder or something. Yes, I have had those cases or mom passes or something happens like that. But it, ultimately there has to be, you know, at least with the cases that I've dealt with. Now there's also, you know, if you have a traumatic birth experience, depending on what happened, I mean, there could be emotional damages or whatnot. I know, though, in my cases, with the ones I deal with, you have to, there's like a physical, you know, physical type injury at the end.
Yeah. So what's the most common type of injury you've seen or worked with?
So that goes, so I'll back up a little bit. So I go through in my book, because I think this is so important, it's the common issues and common facts in the childbirth cases. So by far, the number one most common fact or issue in my cases is the drug Pitocin. And Pitocin is the drug that's used to induce a mom's labor by making her uterus contract. So that is by far the number one issue in my cases. And what happens a lot of times is that, you know, contractions are really hard, not on mom, but on baby. But, you know, mom's lucky because mom can just get an epidural and then she can't feel those contractions. But contractions are very stressful on baby. And if you think about it, baby's inside the uterus, hanging out with the placenta, hanging out with the cord. And if maybe some fluid, if the fluid hasn't drained out, your water hasn't broken yet, you know, everything's housed in the uterus. And then that uterus during a contraction squeezes down on that environment, including the baby. And until that contraction releases, you know, baby has, you know, those are hard. So what it does during a contraction is it stops the oxygen going to baby. So squeezes down, it's like going underwater until the contraction releases. Listen, babies are made to handle contractions. So please don't be concerned at all. This is completely normal. Where they get into trouble with the cases is, you know, if you go into natural spontaneous labor, you know, your body naturally releases oxytocin, and those create natural contractions. Where we get in trouble in the cases is Pitocin is like a synthetic oxytocin. So it's a drug that's supposed to mimic your natural oxytocin. Well, that can be kind of difficult to do. And so again, what happens a lot, the contractions become too much for mom, mom gets her epidural, and then it's like this cascade effect. And the contractions are, they just get to a point, you know, they're artificial, and they get to a point where it's too much on baby. And then it starts to stress baby out. And then unfortunately, a lot of those deliveries end in a very traumatic scenario, whether, you know, it's an operative vaginal delivery, meaning the forceps or the vacuum. Sometimes, you know, those might not be successful and they got to convert to a quick C-section, or they, if baby's not down enough, they may just convert to a quick C-section. And obviously that can be, you know, very, that's not, you know, you're like a little girl and you're playing with, you know, baby dolls and you're dreaming of the big day. You know, you just, you're so excited to give birth and hold your baby for the first time. Literally, if you're in your audience is anything like me, you know, I dreamt of it my entire life. You know, that's not what you dream of. That's not, you know, that's not the scenario. So yeah, most cases it's like starts with Pitocin. It's this cascade effect. And yeah, unfortunately it usually ends up in a very, you know, traumatic delivery of the baby.
Yeah, that was a great explanation. No, we definitely call that the cascade of interventions. And after working in this field for a while and talking to hundreds of women, that happens so often. And I mean, it happened to me. That's how I got involved in this work, is because I'm like, there has to be a better way. You know, it's the prolonged, like you were saying, it's the prolonged contractions that are really, really stressing baby out. And so my body just hated Pitocin. Like, I was very sensitive to it. And so I was getting contractions one on top of the other, on top of the other, and baby wasn't getting a break. And it was the day before Easter, and they turned it up to 20, thinking, oh, it was awful. Like, looking back at my records, I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed because I was so taken advantage of. She wanted to get home to dinner, Easter dinner. And so I, you know, I got the epidural shortly after. The baby's heart rate went into the 20s, and everybody rushed in, and they gave me a shot of, I think it was tributaline, to stop the contractions. Yep. And then I was rolled back screaming, I don't want this, I don't want this, I don't want this. And they're like, but it has to happen, like, sorry, baby, you know. And so of course they saved my baby's life. But looking back at it, and what we can so clearly see when we're working at this, is like, it started back then when I got the Pitocin. So when you, I think it's so important for women to remember, like, every intervention, like, there's risks associated with it. I had no idea. And so many women don't have an idea. And then they get to the end of their birth and they're like, what happened? Am I broken? Did I do something wrong? And that's really a heartbreaking way to start motherhood. So yeah, it's really heartbreaking.
Wow.
But speaking of, I mean, part of that was I was not informed. I did not give informed consent for any of this. I'd been told, you know, this is naturally occurring in your body. That's what the nurse told me. This is just your natural hormone to get your contractions started. And I didn't know any different. I mean, I was a nurse. I should have known that it was synthetic. But when you hear naturally occurring, you're like, oh yeah, sure, it's natural, why not? So anyways, it comes back down to informed consent and your providers. And I'm just curious, after working with so many cases, so many stories, I'm sure I'm a ton of providers, right? Yep. What type of red flags do you see in providers that women should be very cautious of?
So that's a great question. But I still got to go back to your story.
Go for it. Yeah.
Because, like, wow. Like, okay, audience, just so you understand, getting, you know, your Pitocin increased to 20 is, that's a lot of Pitocin. And the fact that it was a day before a holiday, there's your red flag right there. Listen, You are the decision maker in your labor and delivery. Your doctor and your delivery team are your advisors. Don't let them do, you make the decisions. You know, literally, I went to the dentist today and they wanted to do, you know, they do these x-rays. And I'm like, well, he hasn't seen my mouth. Why are they doing these x-rays? And they're like, because we always do these x-rays. I'm like, I'm going to let you do two x-rays. You go show them to the dentist after he evaluates me. Then we're going to do two more. And she didn't know what to do. She just stared at me. And I'm like, no, I'm the decision maker. This is my medical care. And I'm like, and you know what? I'm the decision maker. That is what it is. And I don't like x-rays. But they're so thrown off by the fact if you roll up, this is all of your care in life. You are the decision maker. So keep that in mind. But as the decision maker, it is important to have an understanding of what you're walking into. So a Pitocin induction is a huge thing. That is in almost all of my cases. Now, the flip side of that, I will throw this in because I think it is very important for this podcast. The flip side of that is that the cases involving a natural vaginal delivery that was spontaneous labor, meaning everything's all natural, skipping the drugs, those cases are few and far between. I don't see those deliveries very often. And considering I only see the bad ones resulting in an injury to mom or baby, that is so incredibly important. So, you know, home birth and taking that natural route may be a really great option for you. And again, because those are not the cases that I see. But back to Pitocin. Pitocin, like you had said, is a very individualized drug. And how your body reacts to it, nobody knows. So if that is something that, you know, you're considering at all, or let's say you're in a home birth for your home birth audience, and you have a midwife there, and the midwife's like, you know, I'm not comfortable with something. Let's go up to the hospital. And the hospital offers you Pitocin. In that sense, just keep in mind, it is a very individualized drug. How your body's going to respond to it, nobody knows. For that reason, in my book, I have a whole chapter on how to have a safe Pitocin induction. And it's like slow and steady, let it hit your sweet spot. You know, don't let, because you go into Pitocin, you know, overdrive. I mean, that is so bad for baby. And again, that's what it ends. And it's so, the fact that if they gave you tributyline, there you go. There's a red flag. There are too many contractions. It should never have to get to that. But when providers are in a hurry, then that's what they're going to do. They're going to jack it up and, you know, the C-section. And did they break your water? Do you remember?
The water had broken prematurely. And oh, that's okay. Why they started prematurely, as in I just wasn't in labor for like 6 hours. So then they decided that Pitocin was best and they put it up to every like 30 minutes to an hour. And we had no idea. And no idea.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Yeah, that's I know, you know what? That's why I'm out there doing this.
Yeah.
Because those are my cases. So, you know, it sounds like you were at least extremely lucky that, you know, your baby and you physically ended on the right side of a close call. But you described a case, a typical case, except, you know, you were one of the lucky ones. So I'm very happy for you and your audience. You know, if you've been through this and that's been part of your trauma, you know, hopefully, you know, you guys did end up on the right side of the close call, even though it was traumatic, you have a healthy baby. Because when I have to, you know, sit down with the families and go over the day they lost their baby, the day their baby, you know, was injured permanently. And when I say that, I'm talking about their brain, like they won't be able to ever live independently. It's devastating. Absolutely devastating. So anyway, so let's go. Now let's answer your question. I had to give my Pitocin induction thing because the fact that you went up to 20, I'm just very thankful that you had a, you know, healthy baby. But in that, you know, at least something good came out of it, and that you're starting this podcast and you're out there now trying to share this information and knowledge with other moms so they don't have to go through what you endured. Mm-hmm. So thank you. This is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, provider red flags. Let's see. So I actually have a chapter on how to pick the good doctor. So Listen, instincts and intuition is number one. I start off like I have analyzed doctors who deliver babies for 21 years now. So I have this doctor analysis that I share, and then I'm like, okay, this is what you do. But anyway, number one, instincts and intuition. You know, are you comfortable around your doctor? Do you get the warm fuzzy feeling? Or are you like, I can't really ask my doctor this, or you're kind of maybe shy around them or whatnot? But, you know, you've heard they were a good doctor, so you want to be with a good doctor, but your instincts are like kind of telling you like red flag, or you're just not completely comfortable. Please, audience, follow your instincts, follow your intuition. I tell of a story in the book about the section's called the Yoda Imposter. And basically, I was meeting with a nurse. So we had a baby case. So that means the birth of a baby went wrong. Unfortunately, the baby ended up having brain damage. And I was meeting with a nurse a couple years after the birth of the baby. It was a lawsuit. And she had left that hospital system after the birth of the baby. So she wasn't familiar with what was going on in that system. But she left the hospital. I'm meeting with her. And she looks at a doctor's name and she goes, Yoda. She calls the doctor Yoda. And I'm like, did you just call the doctor Yoda because he looks like Yoda? I didn't think he'd look like Yoda. But I'm like, why is the nurse calling this doctor Yoda? And we went on and I'm like, you know what? Why are you calling him Yoda? And she's like, oh, he's a very wise doctor who does amazing things for his patients. And, you know, he's very highly respected, you know, at that hospital. And I'm like, okay, I'm like, you're going to have to Google Yoda's name. And basically that doctor had been right after she left, had the patients probably started following their instincts and intuition, started to come out about what the doctor had actually done to them. And it was really, you know, there's news stories all over, and I've watched those stories on this doctor, and I'm just like, you know, it's not good. But the point of that whole story is a good reputation does not equate to good care. Eventually, his patients started to follow their instincts and intuition. And when they all came out, then they really all came out. So that's really important. And then your doctor, too, should have good communication skills, because how your doctor talks to you is likely how they're talking to your delivery team. You know, or whatnot. So if, you know, if you're doing a hospital, type birth, but anyway, but yeah, so, doctors really do need to have, or providers have, good communication. I can tell you too, if you're picking your midwife for your home birth, I think one of the things that's super important is that, midwife, you go over, okay, when do we go to the hospital if there's a complication? That is absolutely huge. So in my cases involving midwives, because midwives cannot do certain things. They're not supposed to do vacuums. They're not supposed to do forceps. They can't do C-sections. There's certain things that they cannot do. So at some point, if it's not going well, they must get a doctor involved, or, you know, maybe if it's a home birth, get to the hospital. And when the midwives get in trouble in the cases is when they wait too long. If when they're like, no, I got it. No, I don't got it, but it's too late. So it's important that you go over with a midwife or whatnot. When do we go to the hospital? What's the plan? You know, if something kind of goes sideways. And listen, a red flag with the midwife, if she's like, I hate hospitals, don't worry, I got this, or, you know, anything like that, it would be, you know, you want to definitely just be careful of them. And then in terms of other red flags with doctors, I know that like sometimes a lot of doctors will recommend breaking a patient's bag of water. In my cases, if there's a mistake or a complication, almost always it is after the water breaks. So babies in their nice, comfy environment. And then once that water breaks, their environment changes. And remember, their environment's inside you. So it's not like they can just look, you know, look and assess baby, look and assess the environment. They can't. So that's actually a really big decision. So, you know, if you're around a holiday, or, you know, maybe it's 7 a.m., and a doctor wants to break your bag of water at 7 a.m. and they break everyone's bag of water at 7 a.m. so they can be home for dinner. Like, that's a problem. So, and then the other thing is whenever you're treating with a doctor or midwife, you know, just making sure that you're getting patient specific care. You know, like what I just talked about, you know, there was one doctor and he would do the medical inductions all the same way at 7 a.m. before he went to the practice. He would stop in, and if it was safe to do so, he'd break all the patient's waters. That was just his normal practice. And the nurses are like, yeah, and then he's home for dinner. And I'm like, okay, that's a problem. Or, you know, if it's a holiday or they're going to go on vacation and they want to do something because, you know, they're not going to be around, that's always a red flag. But yeah, I mean, it really just follow that instinct and intuition. Tell you, it's on overdrive when you're carrying your baby. Like, you want to do the right thing and just make sure you follow it.
That's so good. Yeah, I definitely tell. So everyone on here and my clients is like, nobody cares more about you and your baby than you. Like, you are the one who is so in tune with what's going on in your body and your baby that, like, ultimately that decision should be on you, and you should take time to tune in and make those informed and empowered decisions, because it's gonna matter more to you than the doctor. Like, that my doctor, she has probably no idea who I am. I saw her twice during my pregnancy. She's not carrying around that traumatic birth. Like, I will carry that for the rest of my life. And I think people so flippantly choose their providers, which I did too. My best friend chose her. So of course, like, you know, I'm not even going to question it. I'm just going to go with the first person I knew. So that's such an important thing to be thinking about. And on the water breaking, I was just talking to someone the other day about how she was induced with her water breaking and the cord prolapsed, and she was rushed in for a very traumatic C-section, and like, her baby could have died, thankfully. Again, close call. But when you're just routinely doing things, and like you were saying, if it's not patient specific, there's bound to be complications, and who knows, that could be you. And so, just the overall culture that's going on right now at the hospital, like, we need to be aware of. And so you're bringing awareness. And then also for the people who are choosing to go into the hospital, you're like, There's a safer way, like, be informed. And yes. Yeah, so that work is very, very important. And then I also was thinking about, you hear all the stories. I've been a birth doula for about 7 years now. And so you just hear stories of doctors. I actually have a SHIT list on my phone of all the stories that I hear.
Yeah.
Of providers, and you cannot imagine some of the things I've heard, all the way from, like, this doctor never talked to me. He only talked to my husband. And, or like, during a cervical check, I was telling him to stop and he wouldn't. And just like really, really awful, awful things. So yeah.
Wow.
It's a heavy line of work to be in when you're dealing with women and babies. So, would you take some time to talk about birth plans? That's one thing that I know I'm talking about my experience a lot, but when I was going in, like you were saying, you just dream of this day and you're like, oh, it's going to be great. And being a nurse, I just trusted, well, of course the nurses care for me. Like, I care for my patients. So they're going to respect what I want, and they're, you go in all with the rose glasses on. And I brought in my birth plan, and I remembered one time during nursing school when I was on L&D, the nurse had taken a birth plan from a client, threw it down in the nursery after we had walked out of the room, and said, nobody looks at that anyways. And so to me, I was like, okay, well, I spent some time working on this birth plan, but then at the end, I got too scared and I didn't want to show it to the nurse. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on birth plans. How have you seen them? Have you seen them be effective? Any tips that you may have for people who are planning their birth? Okay, and now it's time to share one of my sponsors with you. After my first birth, which ended in a traumatic C-section, I started researching literally everything, including things that go in and on me and my family's body. I started getting rid of everything, first starting with cleaning products and then over-the-counter meds. But makeup has been the hardest thing for me to replace. It seems as all the natural makeup is in powder form, and with the type of covers that I like, it just was not cutting it. That's when I found Araza Beauty's all-in-one coconut cream foundation. This foundation actually improves my skin while providing sun protection and, of course, even coverage. With a dewy finish, almost like a BB cream, it's perfect for everyday wear. Plus, it's packed with ingredients like jojoba oil, probiotics, antioxidants, and zinc oxide, which provides SPF 28 coverage. I also love that Araza Beauty is a woman-owned and dedicated to giving back to victims of domestic violence. I feel great about supporting this company, which makes its super luxurious makeup even more satisfying. Now, I recommend with starting with the foundation. See what I did there, foundation? You won't regret it. Just to make it easier for you, Araza is giving my listeners a special discount of 15% off. So go to arazabeauty.com and use the code EMPOWEREDBIRTH at checkout.
Yeah, so the families in the cases never have birth plans. Oh. So I mentioned that actually in the book. I have chapter 6 is on my, I call it the LAD plan, labor and delivery plan. But listen, my spin on a birth plan is totally different. So the fact you actually didn't give it to your delivery team is fine, because it's not so much the plan in and of itself. It's the act of preparing the plan and taking the time to consider all of your options that's important. And then by doing that, you know, you're also preparing for childbirth. But like the number one lesson from the childbirth cases, remember, as a lesson, we're learning from it from the past, you know, in order to prevent it from happening in the future. But as a the number one lesson is preparing for childbirth and being informed and whatnot. So when you're preparing a plan, and then you also understand that childbirth can be very hard to plan, almost impossible to plan. And if you're lucky and it goes as planned, you are very lucky. But having that understanding that it doesn't always go as planned, but that's why it's so important to get ready for it, is absolutely huge. Because when you go into labor, think about it. I mean, it's the only time in life where being in a bunch of pain is okay. If you don't like the pain, you get your epidural, then you're medicated. But you really do enter a different state of mind. I mean, you have a baby now in your belly, or you, well, I always say belly, but you know, uterus. You know, and it's time to deliver baby. And that is a, wow, talk about a mental and physical challenge. So you really do have to enter a different state of mind. So, you know, but like I said earlier in the podcast, your mom, you're the decision maker. You actually have a really important job, and you're not, you know, and you're in a different state of mind. So having that birth plan, just getting ready to make those decisions and considering all of your options is important. Now, in my book, I go through the different options that you should consider and prepare for just so you're ready. It doesn't go through like candle scents, music, you know, stuff like that. However, I will put it out there. I'm a big fan of those. And if it helps you to relax, that's going to help you, again, deliver baby safely. So you'll have to seek another pregnancy book or Google it or something like that. But mine's definitely the other options that you want, you know, to consider. And then let's say you are going to do a hospital-based birth. If you want to get there and just give it to your delivery team, that's great. If you don't, that's great. Like, it's, again, the act of preparing, which definitely will help, you know, parents have a healthy baby, whether you're at home or you're at the hospital.
Yeah. So for my audience who are planning home births, I know one of the biggest fears is like, well, what happens if I transfer? So do you have any tips or advice for, let's say you've been planning this home birth and it becomes necessary to get medical care? So your midwife suggests home birth, and you end up going. Once you're at the hospital, is there anything I think there's this preconceived notion that, like, well, once my original plan falls through, then, like, I'll just submit to whatever the hospital has. And a lot of times we're not fully prepared for what the hospital does have when you're planning a home birth. So, do you have any tips or advice for, like, questions women could ask if they do get transferred, or what rights they have, maybe, if they don't like the provider that they're that they end up with? Because the reality is, especially where I am, like, we don't get a choice if we have to go into the hospital. It's just whoever is there.
Right.
So do you have anything to add to that?
Right. So if you're going to do a home birth, I mean, it is just very important that you prepare for your home birth, and then you also do prepare for a hospital birth. And then listen, that's going to help you relax, be ready, be confident. I mean, you know, they always talk about fear, and I'm like, fear is the unknown. So the way to overcome fear is by learning about something, educating yourself, and then you won't have that fear. So it's very important that, you know, in order to, you know, make those good decisions and, you know, have a healthy baby, that you understand as part of your home birth process, that you also understand if I get transferred, you know, then what happened? These are my options at the hospital, or understanding you're in charge. When you get to that hospital, you're in charge. Nobody can start an IV. Nobody can do anything, and just make it very clear. And if they do, they are completely in the wrong. And you should be considering, you know, maybe even if nothing was done, you know, there wasn't a permanent injury, but they're not listening to you and they're doing things you don't want to do. That's a huge problem. So, you know, just understanding that again, you're the decision maker. So they're going to get there. So if you are transferred to a hospital, the first thing they're going to do is put baby's the fetal monitor on. And they're going to check the baby's heart rate because, again, baby's inside you. They can't physically assess baby, but the best way to figure out how baby's doing is their heart rate. I've had doctors testify, and I included one of the testimonies from a case that the doctor testified, the only way a baby can talk to me during labor is their heart rate. And it's true. As an attorney specializing in childbirth cases, the first thing I learned how to do was read a baby's heart rate. It took me an hour. I can look at a baby's heart rate and I can tell you if the baby's a rock star or if the baby's struggling. So it's important, you know, and I think up until now, I mean, I'm up there jumping up and down these days, you know, hey, parents, you need to understand what your baby's heart rate is and what it means, because if they're going to offer you any type of intervention, whether it's C-section or vacuum, or if they want to expedite, if they want to do an intervention, it all starts with your baby's heart rate. I actually think it's so important. I have a whole chapter on how to read the baby's heart rate, because up until now, up until I'm jumping up and down as the attorney, you know, the medical community seems like they just want to keep the baby's heart rate to themselves. They are like, yeah, they're like, this is medical information. I'm like, no, it's not. I learned how to read it in an hour, and it was probably less than an hour. I was probably tired. Because it was, you know, first job. And so it's important to kind of understand, you know, if you do go to the hospital, you know, and there you're going from a home birth, the first thing they're gonna do, put down the baby's heart rate. And then they're gonna make recommendations to you based upon what they're seeing with the baby's heart rate. You know, probably do a cervical exam, see how far you're dilated, efface, the station of the baby, which are the three things that they look at during a cervical examination. Again, this is stuff I cover in my book. So anybody, you know, you'll be ready for hospital birth if you read my book. So they'll do that. They'll make some recommendations. So depending on what they are, you know, then you decide. And they may give you, like, you're like, okay, well, baby's okay. Excuse me, we're going to do this intervention, or, you know, I go through all the interventions in my book, or testing, that other testing that they may do. So now, if you understand what those are, you know, it's easier to make those good decisions. And I can't remember if I've told your audience this or not, but, you know, the families are one decision or minutes from a healthy baby. So when you get to that hospital and you have to make those decisions, because if you're being transferred to the hospital, you know, especially in the setting of home birth to hospital, I think those decisions become very, very important. But again, those are things that I cover all in my book to help you make those good decisions, to give you the foundation of, you know, knowledge to make those good decisions. But I also do get into chapter three. You had asked me about what if you don't like the doctor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's important. That's really important because the doctor, so your delivery team, if you get to the hospital, they're in charge of delivering your baby safely. And when we have a case, it is the delivery team's care that is at issue and analyzed more than any other aspect of the case. The doctor heads that team. So likely, if you have not been treating with a doctor during your pregnancy, they're going to give you whoever is covering the shift that day or the in-house doctor. If it's a larger facility, there could be a couple of them, you know, but you may only like this might be your doctor. And I think it's just important that if you're, you know, as long as you're ready for childbirth and you have an understanding of it, you know, that doctor should be giving you recommendations and you're going to have to decide, do you follow the recommendations or not? I have not said this yet. This is so incredibly important. As a childbirth attorney, meaning for 21 years, I've only seen the bad things. I've never had a birth doula in any of my cases. If a doula would have even spoken to a patient or a mom that is part of my case, she would be a witness in my case and I would be familiar with that doula. I've never had one. So having also a good birth doula, and they go to the hospital and they're, you know, they're also working with you. They're your advocate. So they're helping you make that good decision. And it's nice because with birth doulas, you guys do such a good job on educating your clients. But then also what people don't realize is you're also building like a relationship with them. And because moms need to be able to trust somebody during this, you know, very powerful moment in their life. And so, you know, if you do get that hospital transfer, having your birth doula right there with you, making these decisions, helping to advocate. Now, if you get to the hospital and you don't like your doctor, but that you really just don't have any choices, you know, that then, you know, that's where your birth doula really comes into play. Now, nurses are easier. If you don't like your labor and delivery nurse, which, by the way, I love my labor and delivery nurses. Gosh, you get a good one. They're so awesome. But I have had cases where I would not let a nurse come near the birth of my grandkids. You know, it is what it is. It's like every single profession, right? So you get a bad nurse. I tell you in the book, like, okay, this is what you need to do. But, you know, that's something also your birth doula can help. Or if your husband's ready, that's huge, huge too, being an advocate for you and your baby along with your birth doula. But yeah, so it's definitely in your plan. If you have to go to the hospital, just make sure your birth doula stays with you.
Yeah, no, that's really powerful. And I will note that most home birth transfers that happen, the majority of the time it's due to maternal exhaustion. And so these women are coming in and they're, you know, having to decide, do I get the Pitocin? And then they get an epidural. And so most of the time now there are definitely moments where like it is an emergency and they have to go, but that's, yeah. And when I was working in the hospital as a doula, one of the biggest things that I think was helpful is taking the medical ease, like the terminology that had been used and translating it to the parents so that they could be making a more informed decision. And I don't think that a lot of people realize that if you're using language that people can't understand, like a lot of medical terms, then it's not true informed consent. If they can't tell you back what you are wanting or what they are wanting you to do, that's not true informed consent. And so having a birth doula who is really well-versed in all of the options and, you know, educated in that, it really matters. Because I've also seen doulas who are like, I'll just come and like not do anything. And that's unfortunate. And yeah, so also when I was a doula in the hospitals, one of my main objectives was empowering the dad. And that's still something that I've come to, because who's going to have the closest relationship? Who's going to care about this baby more than even a doula? It's going to be the dad. And so the dad, there is something so powerful. Instead of me stepping in and being like, hey, doctor, she didn't want this. You know, she doesn't want a cervical check. Having the dad step up and be like, hey, we discussed this and this is not in our birth plan. You know, like just saying that the atmosphere changes, that protector mode goes on, and they just, there's a different type of energy in that room of like, I'm protecting her so she can relax and do what she needs to do. That is powerful. And so I think that's really, really important and profound. But as we close, is there anything else that you would like to say? Anything we've missed? Or any last tips or advice you could give to my listeners?
Yeah, definitely. So really just kind of off what you were just talking about, but having somebody there that speaks the language of the delivery team is absolutely huge. And I literally write that in my book. And then in terms of dad, I love how you guys prepare the dads. That makes me so incredibly happy because I listen to a lot of labor and delivery nurses these days, and they keep reporting to me that dads are in the corner playing Candy Crush. And I am like, how, what? And I get so upset because, like, dads should instinctively want to protect their baby. And I get it. Maybe up until now, they did not know how. My book, your coaching, stuff like that will help guide them so they can protect their baby, they can protect their wife, and at the end of the day, safely bring them home. And so, yeah, that is so incredibly important. I love how you guys do that, and it's definitely part of my book. How to be a good, I even write in the book what dad needs to know in order to be a good advocate. Because again, it's so incredibly important because I know in some of these cases, if when I go and I talk to the families, they know so much more in the aftermath of something going wrong that I know if they would have known this ahead of time, something would have been different. Some they would have been able to appropriately advocate or do what they needed to do, especially dad, to bring, their wife and baby home safely. So that's it. I mean, there's not too much more. I don't know, I really appreciate what you're doing for everybody out there because, my mission right now is I don't want any more cases. I'm still a practicing attorney. I'm still a partner in my law firm. The hardest day of my life is when I have to sit down with the families, and I'm here trying to get involved before childbirth to help families have a healthy baby. And you are doing the same thing. And I just can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your time coming on. And I really do think your book is going to be important for both people who are planning a hospital birth, but for people planning home birth as well. Again, one of the biggest questions I get asked, like I hear this so often, is, well, what happens if I have to transfer? And just knowing, like, these are the interventions that happen in a hospital. These are your rights. This is how dad can be your best advocate. All of that is so extremely relevant. And yeah, very important for us to know. There was a point in my last labor that we were considering having to transfer, and I was very thankful. I've navigated the hospital system so many times with other women and just myself as well, that if it was to happen, I know I would still have been in control of every single decision I would make. I no longer am in the passenger seat of my health and my decisions. Nobody's going to take that. So, I just think that you carry yourself differently, and not just in birth, but like through the rest of your life at the dentist, even like you were saying. So, I'm so thankful for this book and for you coming on. Where can people buy it and connect with you if they have more questions?
Oh, sure. So the best place is always my website, Gina Mundy, GINAMUNDY.com. And literally, you can go to the scroll all the way to the bottom and it'll say contact Gina. And it's an email and it literally pops up on my phone if you ever need me. If you do get to the hospital and a doctor's like, you don't have a choice, but email me. Give me your phone number. I get so upset when I hear this. But for your audience out there, I have not been saying this on podcasts and shame on me, but if you need anything, please reach out, ask me a question. I don't care. I'm here to help you guys. I'm here hopefully to eliminate my job sometime in the future. So if you do have those questions, you do have those issues, it goes to my cell phone. And, you know, I'll definitely be happy to call you or talk to you. You know, anything to make you feel happy, comfortable about having, you know, or helping have you have a healthy baby. But and then in terms of buying my book, it's always a link on my website. I mean, right now, if you just put Gina Mundy in Amazon, go to Amazon in the search bar, put Gina Mundy, easy, super easy way to find my book and my reviews and all that stuff. And in terms of following me on social media, probably Instagram seems to be where I'm getting like the biggest following and most interaction with people. So those awesome. Probably are my info.
Well, I will put that all in the show notes below so you can connect with Gina. And thanks again so much for your time.
Oh, thank you, Allie. It was a great conversation.
I hope you loved today's episode and found it so helpful and encouraging. If you did, would you take 30 seconds to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend who has been praying for a peaceful home birth? Lastly, make sure you get my free download of my complete home birth essentials checklist. Make sure you have everything ready to go so you're able to feel at peace and confidence leading into your home birth. This printable checklist has all of the important but less glamorous or thought of items that I have found to be so incredibly helpful to have at a home birth after working with many clients in person. Now, get it by clicking the link in the show notes. And as always, thanks for listening and peace be with you.